Blog Talk Radio.
And here we go.
All right, welcome back to That Nerd Show. It's Wednesday, and we hope that everybody's getting over their the hump of the week. Yeah, I said that. Anyway, I'm your host, Marcus Blake, and with me, as always, co-hosting is Brendan Smith.
How you doing, campers?
And with us tonight, guest as part of our panel, is Chloe James.
Hey, guys.
So we figured Chloe should be with us as we're talking about our artificial intelligence, and we'll be talking a little bit more in depth on the review on Ex Machina. So we got actually a lot to talk about tonight, and we're going to try to keep it all under an hour and not go off totally deep, you know, totally off the deep end when it comes to artificial intelligence. So if you need to get your drinks now before we have a theoretical discussion on artificial intelligence with a few wisecracks mixed into it.
Oh, I don't have a drink. Boo. Oh, well.
If you only had this mobile phone that you could carry, talk on the air, and do stuff at the same time. Anyway.
I'm stuck at work.
That's nice. Okay, so very first news item, because we've got quite a few little news items for you. So for all of you that actually want to see a full colored picture of Ben Affleck in the bat suit, you can go to comingsoon.net or you can go to That Nerd Show on Facebook, because we just posted it. And it is much more of the Frank Miller grayish black, as most people have probably figured out. And I'm going to say this, even though we're all very skeptical of, you know, Ben Affleck being able to do this role, and the trailer hasn't really convinced anybody that he's going to be good yet, I do like how he looks in the uniform. So I still like Christian Bale better in that Batman universe. But for a comic book, darker tone, like I said, I can definitely see it. And that's all I'm going to say and comment on that photo. So, have you guys seen it yet, or is it still breaking news for you?
That came out before, I guess, that you posted that today, I guess, from him.
Okay.
Dude, I mean, he looks legit, like, from the comic books. Like, he buffed up. I'm okay with that.
I'm not.
You're not?
Look, I figure they're going to get the look right, okay? And I don't mind the dark.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at it now, but has anybody looked more annoyed that they were in the Batman suit? I mean, just look at his body language. His shoulders are slumping. His mouth, it's less of a scowl and more of a frown. He's like frumpy Batman.
Hey, his parents are dead, okay? That's why he...
Well, this is 40-year-old Batman, okay?
That.
He's allowed to be a little frumpy.
And his parents are still dead. Can't get over that.
Yeah, a lot of people's parents are dead. Get over it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Speaking of looks, when it comes to costuming and all that, apparently the Jared Leto's look for the Joker is going to be different than the teaser photo they threw out on the net this past week.
Yeah, that was apparently just a promo photo for something else anyway.
Yeah, because that deranged tattoo on the middle of his forehead was stupid.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm the Joker. I'm known for dressing up in costumes so nobody can tell who I am, except now I have this deranged tattoo on my forehead that everybody's going to know me by.
I think I finally figured out what the promo picture was for. It wasn't for the Joker. They mixed it up. They had the wrong headline. It was for Requiem of a Dream 2, the next heroin trip.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know what it was
I'm
for.
I'm just saying. Well, anyway.
I don't know if I'd want to watch that movie.
And Brendan, this one's going to make you very, very happy, so you should probably already know where I'm going with this. Yes, it was announced that a Punisher series is in development on Netflix.
Woo!
So we are going to get that.
Is that officially announced, or was that just that rumor that I saw earlier?
No, it's in development. I mean, where it goes from there, that
Yeah, because the one I saw was just a rumor, and it really wasn't all that credible from what the review was.
I think they've seen the success of the Daredevil series.
I know Charlie Cox and Stephen DeKnight both want a Charlie Cox wants Punisher as a guest star in season two. He's already come out and said that.
I think the important thing to remember here is development doesn't mean that it's actually going to happen, and it does pass our double confirmation in regards to journalism. It has been posted by more than one credible source, so it's probably one of those things where, hey, we have it in development for, you know, just teasing it, but it's very early. Everything could change. We don't know how it will necessarily fit within, you know, what Netflix and Marvel are doing in the Defender series. So, but I like that. I like the direction. Hopefully, I think with the success of everything, I think it's a very good possibility that we do get to see a Punisher series.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good possibility. I don't want to get hyped up over it because Punisher is one of my favorite characters, and it works so well with Daredevil. I mean, they've partnered up numerous times in the comics, and the only place, everything I've found about this rumor is, there's like 10 different sources out there, but they're all referencing the same comic blog. They're all referencing the Vigilantist.com.
That's what development is. So, I mean, it does.
To me, it's too much rumor. I'm not banking on anything until I hear something from Marvel.
Well, that's why we're not saying it's a complete done deal. So, until they actually announce and slate it, we have a cast, that's what development is. It doesn't, but again, I'll put it to you this way. If we're going to talk about what we can report in responsible journalism and everything, the fact that it's been mentioned, and it probably has among all the characters and things they can do on Netflix, and that's why they can say development, it's gotten past the point of we've talked about it, and we're going to see what we can do with it. Okay? And I think that's what we can report. You're still a long way off, and you have the right to be discouraged or, you know, very cautious about it. But, you know, like I said, that is out there as a possible series on Netflix. And we will at least report that. So, but this one's for Chloe. Chloe, get a little excited with this one because Dragon Ball is getting its first new anime series in 18 years.
I was going to mention that if you weren't. I read about that today.
Oh, no, it was in my news rundown. it is coming back after 18 years. So for everybody that's still upset that there's going to be an American movie with Scarlett Johansson, here you go. Dragon Ball's coming back in a TV series. Yay! Could be excited. Okay, this is actually just rumor, but we will talk about it because we like to talk about casting news. And everybody has their own theory on who should play the next Peter Parker. But Asa Butterfield, who was in the Ender's Game movie, he is supposedly the front runner to play Peter Parker in the next Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I heard about that today, too, and I'm actually pretty cool with that because he's a good actor, I think.
Go ahead, Brendan.
Well, my only thing is I hope he looks a little bit older than all the promo photos they're using because I know Peter Parker is young, but this kid looks like he's four.
baby face, but he's the right age. He's the age that I actually want to turn him out on.
Yeah, he's 18, but, you know, how many times do they actually cast an 18-year-old to play an 18-year-old because he usually looks too young to be around.
Right.
Yeah, we're not used to actually seeing an 18-year-old playing an 18-year-old, so.
Right, because, that goes all the way back to, you know, when Marcus and I were in high school and they were doing Beverly Hills 90210 and they had a couple of 30-year-olds playing high school kids. So, you know, I mean, they just – and there's a reason why they do that, and it's because when they're that young, they look even younger, and especially guys, because girls develop quicker than guys, and, you know, guys don't really start developing until they turn 18. So, you know, it's just, you're going to have this kid going head to head with Iron Man and Captain America. It's going to be like, dude, shouldn't you be at home, like, doing your grade school homework? You know, so I don't know. I just hope he looks a little bit older than they're using in the stock photos, because I think they're all from Ender's Game, and that was a couple of years ago. So
right.
Yeah, he was, like, 16 then. So.
Well, you know, the other thing is, are they going into production this year on Spider-Man, or is that, like, a next year thing?
Yeah.
Well,
no, we don't.
He's going to be in Civil War, so that's coming out next year.
Oh,
well,
yeah. They better cast him soon, I guess.
Well, yeah, they have to, because Civil War starts filming in, like, 2 months.
Yep.
Anyway, that's the latest rumor. I don't personally have a problem with this, because I think he's, you know, done a good job in other films. I personally kind of liked, you know, Dylan O'Brien a little bit. Is, you know, the other kind of front runner. But, you know, we'll see what happens. That's all we can do at this point. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to mention another Spider-Man related rumor, that Sony actually might be developing a new Spider-Man animated series too.
Well, there
yeah,
we
that
go.
That would surprise me. I could see that as a way of Marvel kind of sharing the dividends with Sony, being like, yeah, we got him back, but you can still use him this way here. Have
yeah,
fun.
That's something to do. Fun for kids. I might be okay.
So for Star Trek science-y people, fans out there, Star Trek has always pushed the envelope when it comes to developing new technology. This one actually really caught my eye, as I'm sure it did everybody, that NASA may have invented warp drive. And, of course,
well,
it's got a picture of
yeah,
so,
I posted that one yesterday. It's a little bit more, NASA actually didn't invent this. They kind of got misreported. The company that invented it is called EM Drive. They're out of England. NASA just funded it. But basically, they were in a small-scale test. They were able to create an environment that is what they think theoretically what a warp bubble would be. And they were able to pass light beams through it that moved faster than light.
Huh.
So,
yeah,
it's like the very first step on the road to FTL travel.
It's a start.
Yep.
Well, and one day, we've actually had planned kind of a series of shows of, you know, how good sci-fi does push the envelope on, you know, technology. What is visualized in fiction, how does it turn out to be true? I know the History Channel does a lot of similar things of, you know, can you actually do this? So I think this
Discovery
is exciting.
Did Star Wars tech.
Right.
So.
I mean, it's an ongoing thing. And as nerds, we definitely do want to talk about it. And, you know, we're kind of talking a little bit about it today with artificial intelligence, even though we're looking at it from a storytelling standpoint. So... All right, real quick, in the next 60 seconds, is there any quick gaming news?
Yeah, so we had more info on Star Wars Battlefronts coming out in November. It's going to launch with four planets. There's going to be no single-player campaign. There will be single-player missions that you can play single-player or co-op, either couch co-op or online co-op, but there's no single-player campaign for us. Single-player guys, Battlefront... probably not going to be our cup of tea, although the online play does look amazing. The next Star Wars game is probably going to be what single-player gamers want to play, and that's going to be coming from Visceral next year, and it's going to be written by Amy Henning, who wrote Uncharted 1, 2, and 3. So that, based on her experience, that's probably going to be some type of third-person with a third-person single-player with a lot greater in-depth story. As far as the big gaming news, for those of you who are huge Konami fans and Hideo Kojima fans, which everybody knows I'm not the biggest Hideo Kojima fan.
sorry, go on.
Well, there's a reason why I can't stand his writing. But anyway, after Metal Gear Solid 5, Kojima is leaving Konami. They've had a very screwed up split, and it's not been handled well in the press. Konami has just bungled the PR on this. We've all known it's been coming for a month, and finally it's all out there. But the real tragedy of this, and even though I don't like Kojima games, I was looking forward to this game, Silent Hills has been canceled. So Silent Hills, which was going to feature Kojima teaming up with Guillermo del Toro and Norman Reedus as the main character from Walking Dead and Boondock Saints, they actually scanned Norman Reedus into the game. They were going to use his voice. That game is no more. So, yeah, very sad.
That's so tragic.
The playable trailer, which was probably one of the scariest video game things to come out in years, since probably Silent Hill 2, that gets removed from the PlayStation Store today. So if you want to have it on your hard drive and you have a PlayStation 4, get on the PlayStation Store and download it before midnight, or you will not have it ever. It's being pulled. Excuse me. So that's gaming news.
Well, all right then. So this will probably actually take the next 15 minutes because we do have a lot to talk about. But before we get to a couple of reviews, this was a news item that actually definitely most certainly gets put in this week's Sign of the Apocalypse. So it's bad enough that we have to have Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill in a sequel to 21 Jump Street and everything. And then they're thinking about doing another one. But now, just to add injury to insult and really fuck up our nerd world, we're going to have a crossover between 21 Jump Street and Men in Black.
Ugh, kill me now.
this is beyond, like, all right. Look, this is the crossover that nobody needed or wanted. Like, nobody ever went, you know what would be a great idea? Let's cross over G.I. Joe and My Little Pony. You
know, I'm sure some people have on DeviantArt, but still.
Yeah.
Well,
that's different. That's showing off your artistic skills. Look, it's just seriously, really, that's just awful.
It is. However, I do have something good that can come about with this. I do. One thing. Even though Men in Black 3 was and stuff, I mean, it's, you know, the movies are still fun with Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith, and I think they work well together. But if we get a scene where Channing Tatum's character is really an alien and they're just going to keep shooting his head off like in the first one, I would be down with that. Go ahead and let's get a crossover. Let's have some fun with that. Okay. And
wow.
I can honestly be okay with a little bit of the crossover if they made fun of Channing Tatum being an alien, like they did with Michael Jackson and Elvis and everybody else,
mm-hmm.
Within the Men in Black universe. So if you want that kind of funny cameo that's laughable, fine. But let's not have, like, some kind of ridiculous, serious movie where these two high school cops, which is basically what they are, you know, in some ridiculous after-school special, is going to team up with Men in Black and save the universe. No.
Yeah, some ultra-secret division of the government.
Right. I think Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones have got that part handled. So,
right.
Again, you know, 3 was not that bad. I mean, it was mildly... Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
it's,
I would
Men
definitely
in Black.
Watch it.
I mean, I wasn't expecting, you know,
right.
Rosebud and, you know, Citizen Kane. By the way, some breaking entertainment news we may have missed. Are you guys familiar with Aquarius, David Duchovny's new series that's going to be on NBC?
I was holding off on that towards the end, so we'll get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
Yeah, I know where you're going with
it.
But, yeah.
Well, it's just how they're releasing it.
Anyway,
we'll get it later.
Yeah, we'll do it for the last couple of minutes with what you should be streaming and explain why you should be doing this in the new format. So, which is something else that we're going to be getting into a lot more on this show and about how we review TV shows. So, anyway, getting on to reviews. We're going to start with Daredevil first. And we apologize to our fans for not having a review of the Daredevil series out fairly early, but we were covering the Dallas Film Festival, and that's 11 days of craziness out of our lives, and we're just now finishing up all the interviews that we did almost 2 weeks after it's ended. So now that Brendan and I both have finally, you know, well, Brendan's been through it two or three times, but I finally got through it.
Yeah.
All I can tell you, I'm gonna preface it with this. I'm easily giving it a 9 out of 10. I'm not giving it a perfect 10, because it's not perfect by any means, okay? But it has the potential. And Stephen DeKnight, I was a huge fan of Spartacus and what you did with that. And your level of storytelling, you have certainly brought that to something else that I truly, truly love. And Daredevil in a 13-episode series was amazing, absolutely amazing. And Brendan and I, you know, we talk a lot about our reviews, you know, over pints at the pub, so we had a nice lengthy discussion on this, and this is one of the points that he brought up, and this is what makes Stephen DeKnight great as a showrunner. You feel more sympathy for the bad guys than you do the good guys, and that was so much the case in this series. So
yeah, he takes the time to actually go into what drives the bad guys and gives you as much of their backstory as he does the hero's backstory, so you can almost identify with them as much as the hero, and it makes for very compelling storytelling.
Well, you know, if you're a comic book nerd, you already kind of know the backstory of Daredevil, just like everybody knows the backstory of Batman and Superman and whatnot, okay?
Yeah.
You got enough of the backstory from the crappy Ben Affleck movie to know what happens and stuff. The only added difference between like watching a crappy movie in this series is you get a little bit more in depth about how he develops his skills. Okay, and the added addition of Scott Glenn's character into Daredevil again, truly amazing. But it's dark. It's not so campy dark that you kind of ignore it. I mean, it's like, wow, they live up to the name with Hell's Kitchen. Every one of these characters you're afraid of, okay? You love the really funny, and not to take away from Jon Favreau in the movie, he was great as a little sidekick lawyer. But you didn't get to see that relationship develop and have to deal with trust issues once your best friend finds out your secret. And I know that's kind of a major spoiler. However, it's kind of a given that your best friend usually finds out about what you do.
Yeah.
Or your girlfriend or wife or whatever.
Sooner or later, yeah.
Yeah, and how you have to deal with that. But the evolution of how he becomes Daredevil and the simple fact that you don't get to see him in the suit until the very end, you know, and it's not like Smallville where they made you wait 10 years before you finally got to put on the Superman uniform.
Yeah, right.
It just, yeah. I came away after watching the series like, look, I feel sorry for Fisk. I feel sorry for what he is, and I don't think he is necessarily a bad guy. Yeah, he's corrupt. Yeah, he, you know, doesn't do things on the up and up. Well, hell, I'm from Chicago. That's every politician.
Yeah. It's the old road to hell, you know, paved with good intentions.
Right. And yeah. And that's exactly what it is with him. They both have two visions on what's going to make that city great. But they can't work with each other because they're at opposite ends of how to accomplish that. So, like I said, absolutely amazing and making me feel sympathetic for the bad guys while, you know, rooting for Daredevil and everything and every one of the characters.
You touched on something earlier, too, that I think is a big part of the show. The setting of Hell's Kitchen is very much a character in the show. There's only one problem in real life. The setting Hell's Kitchen no longer exists. The entire neighborhood has been torn down, rebuilt, and gentrified, and it's not even called Hell's Kitchen anymore. I forget what they call it now, but it's been completely redone.
Is it called Shit Town?
No, it's actually
a lot,
very expensive. It's actually a very expensive place to live because, like I said, it's been, you know, torn down and rebuilt and. You know, all the big money, basically what Fisk was trying to do has actually already happened in real life. So Marvel did something very clever and basically just, they kept calling it Hell's Kitchen, but instead of trying to say that it was it was downtrodden and horrible because it's always been downtrodden and horrible. They very cleverly tied it into the MCU by saying that all the problems were caused by the event, as they call it, or the, I forget exactly what they called it, but which was the incursion, the alien incursion in the Battle of New York with the Avengers. And so they very loosely tied it into the MCU without getting into, you know, there was a couple other remarks of Captain Shield and Thor's hammer and all that stuff, but, they really, that was how they tied it into the MCU without going overboard, but also how they really set up Hell's Kitchen as a downtrodden neighborhood, because it was very important to keep Hell's Kitchen as part of the Daredevil and really for all of the Defenders, for all the four that are coming, because they all operate out of Hell's Kitchen. It was very important to keep that setting as part of the show because it's such an important part of the character. It is a character in and of itself. So I really enjoyed how they handled that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. The color of this isn't supposed to be light and all happy and stuff. I tell you, in a lot of ways, it did remind me of a Tim Burton type of Gotham-esque city from that first Batman movie. Not as comic bookish, but in that darker tone that you know that there's a major crime element and this is just a shitty place to live. But I also had special pleasure with the little dingy bar they go to and drink, and especially when they won't make the vodka martini for the pretty blonde. You're going to get what we give you because you're basically drinking for free.
I think it was more like Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy than it was Tim Burton, just because Tim Burton went so over the top with the gothic styling. You don't see flying buttresses in downtown Manhattan or in Chicago like you did in Tim Burton.
No.
You don't see that. It very much reminded me of the tone of the Dark Knight trilogy. Not that the writing was the same or that the character development was the same, because it's completely different, but just the tone of the setting and the colorizations they used was very much similar.
If there's one thing that Daredevil made me excited for besides season two, was I can't wait to see all the Defenders together in that tone. And I can't wait to see more of the villains that are going to be sympathetic. And I just, like I said, truly, truly amazing. And I'm glad that it was on Netflix and that people got to binge watch. So for me personally, again, it's a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, and you convinced me to watch it, which I'll have to admit to the audience, I haven't seen it yet because I'm too scared.
See, Chloe.
I
shouldn't even have to convince you. You're a nerd.
I know, but as a nerd, I don't like to be hurt. I don't like it. My heart.
No, it's so much better than the movie. Kelly, do you have a PlayStation?
Chloe? Okay.
Sorry.
3, 2, 1. Yeah, all of them.
Okay, do you have a PS Plus membership?
Not anymore. I let it run out, but I could always get another one.
Oh. Yeah, you need to watch Powers as well, because that finished, so you can watch all 10 episodes.
We will be doing a review on Powers next week, too, another streaming show that we're going to get into. Yes, okay.
It's only
on PS Plus. We're going to do our review on Avengers right now, because Brenda and I have seen it, and we're going to tell you why you should go see it in the theater starting tomorrow. And we don't give a crap about any embargoes by studios or anything. We're just going to tell you about it tonight on our show. You know why? Because we can. And we are that nerd show. I know. Sometimes there's embargo.
Well, it's not like
we're going to
say anything bad about it anyway. So,
sometimes we have to wait to the very last minute before we release a review. And I don't always like to do that, but it's a give and take. Okay, so here's why Avengers 2 is awesome. It's Avengers 2. No. One of the best things I think about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is how all the movies tie into, pushing the story forward. Okay, and you're definitely seeing what this story is with all of them now after you've seen another Thor movie, Captain America 2, there's two different like versions of S.H.I.E.L.D. They're still going off of, you know, after Hydra. But you're also seeing this team and how they work well with one another after going through their, you know, the first major battle and stuff. And this kind of camaraderie and back and forth with one another. But at the same time, you know, the differences between them. You know, you have two very opposite, like, kind of sides of the Avengers. You have the Tony Stark side, the egomaniac scientist, and then the straight-edge soldier, we're always going to do what's right, you know, Captain America, which I absolutely love. They're not supposed to get along, but they also kind of need each other. And I think that very much comes through in Avengers 2. What made this film great was the introduction of, you know, the twins, the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. I definitely like this version of Quicksilver better than, you know, what was in the X-Men movie. And you feel very sympathetic for why they hate Tony Stark and, you know, why they feel like they need to do what they need to do only to kind of turn out to be good guys and be part of the next, you know, generation of Avengers. Excuse me, everybody. But as for it, comparing to the first one, which was just probably, in my mind, the best comic book movie next to, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't think it's as good as the very first movie, okay? Because you had a lot of time to get to know each of these characters, build up their relationships, and how they come together. This one, you just get thrown into all hell breaking loose and what's going on. So there isn't a lot of that development with them anymore. It's just kind of, well, here they are now, and now we have to go fight some, you know, the worst enemy they've ever had to face, only to find out that it is partly Tony Stark's fault and his ego getting in the way once again. I would give Avengers 2 an 8 out of 10. I don't give it a perfect 10. My biggest complaints is, while the action is great and there's still, you know, some great one-liners, Brendan mentioned it before, there isn't the big aha, really great funny line that just keeps you laughing forever, you know, throughout the movie. And I also feel like it was a little bit, yeah, I feel like it was a little bit rushed. So to me, there seems to be, you know, like 20, 30 minutes missing from the film that would tie in scenes. So I'm very anxious to see what the director's cut would be. And I've heard that there is a director's cut coming out from the Blu-ray that will be, you know, 2 hours and 45 minutes to 3 hours.
It doesn't have an alternate ending as well?
Yeah, with an alternate ending and stuff. I think that will probably make me push closer to a perfect 10 on this movie. So to me, this is like Kingdom of Heaven. Like I enjoyed the theatrical version, but once I saw the director's cut and how all everything really tied into each other, then I was like,
that's
truly an amazing movie. Yeah, and you need to watch the 4-hour version.
That's how it is with so many movies. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I feel about Avengers 2. I just feel like there's too much missing with this theatrical version, but still a lot of fun and great to see. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, they didn't have, like I said, they didn't have the one big hilarious moment, but I thought they had 5 or 6 really funny lines that, you know, were pretty good. You know, Thor and Vision had a great little exchange, and the fight between Hulkbuster Iron Man, and I know some comic fans are like, that's not the Hulkbuster, that's a different thing, and yeah, I know. We're going to call it Hulkbuster because, frankly, it's easier than explaining that to everybody else. So Hulkbuster, Iron Man, and Hulk, that had some great lines in it. You know, I thought James Spader as the voice of Ultron was hilarious. He was great. I mean, he's always great, though. You know, I'm just imagining Raymond Reddington as a superhuman AI. So that was a lot of fun. It worked. I mean, the movie worked. You know, I don't want to get too spoilery on it, but, you know, there were some good lines between Quicksilver and Hawkeye, too. And I like how they actually gave Hawkeye a little bit more meat to chew on this time.
Right.
You know, he wasn't just there for half the movie.
I love Hawkeye.
Yeah, I mean, they actually gave Jeremy Renner some... Well, that was really his fault, though. They didn't give him any material to work with in the first movie, and I thought he had a lot more to work with in this movie.
He's kind of like the brainwashed victim, so, I mean, that was something.
Yeah. And there's actually a fun little line in reference to that, too, that's pretty good.
Oh, cool.
But, yeah, so... I thought all in all it worked. I think 8 out of 10 is a fair score for it. I don't think it was the best movie in the MCU yet, but I think it was a very good one.
I think
it does a nice job of laying the groundwork and setting up Civil War and you know, the Infinity War down the line. Of course, we have to get through Civil War and Thor Ragnarok before we get to Infinity War. But yeah, it does a really good job, and at first, it's for the first time they actually name the Infinity Gems what they are. I think Thor
yeah,
comes right out and says what they are. So I thought those were all good things.
Look, you had a great antagonist, and having James Spader as the voice was perfect. The whole storyline with Jarvis and dealing with the artificial intelligence was great. And since we are kind of moving that way into the rest of our show...
Yeah, tying into the next thing.
I will say this. I love the references to Mad Scientist, Embrace It. You know, Tony Stark is an egomaniac and wants to keep tinkering with things that he probably shouldn't, but he knows he's not going to stop. You know, and of course he's going to entice his guilt-ridden, you know, science buddy Bruce Banner to do the same. And Ultron very much is the Frankenstein's monster in a lot of ways for them. But to have that storyline that which will eventually lead into Civil War and stuff, this is what I was trying to say with Tony Stark and Captain America, very much opposites of one another, but they also need each other. But again. Mm-hmm. It's going to make things dicey, you know, for the Avengers and for the whole little Marvel universe down the line. But, you know, you couldn't have gotten anybody better than James Spader, I don't think, to voice that. And it was nice to actually have Paul Bettany actually in costume on something instead of just hearing his voice.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
And he was very good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, we're not going to say anything about the credit scenes or spoil anything for you on that, but I will say to end this review, the final scene with the new Avengers and everything, fantastic, and I can't wait to see more Marvel movies. And I think that's the good thing about Avengers 2. I still think that the first Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy will probably be the two best movies they will ever do, but... But doesn't mean that we don't get to have a lot more fun, and that the Infinity Wars aren't going to be exciting. So,
yeah,
nice job setting everything up. Yeah,
yeah, and they brought in the, you know, they mentioned Wakanda, which is where Black Panther is from. So,
right,
you know that, and the home of vibranium,
right,
which Spader had a great line about that. But
right. And we're not going to tell you. You just have to go see the movie and see it.
It was funny.
I'll be
anyway.
Doing that tomorrow with you guys.
That's right. We will be there. And if you're in the Dallas area, we'll be doing our promo night at Cinemark Legacy in Plano. So you should come out and see it. Okay.
And what time will we be there?
We'll be doing the 9:30 screening, but we'll be there plenty of time before. So come hang out. We'll be doing trivia with multiple audiences and also filming a little bit for our documentary Jedis from Dallas as we finally get to see the Star Wars trailer on the big screen. Even though we've all probably seen it at least 20 times.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. Okay. We're running out of time, so we gotta jump into the rest of our show so we can try to get everything in. Of course, we could probably, with this crowd, we could talk for hours on end, and we won't necessarily do that all night. We know some of you have to get some sleep. But anyway, artificial intelligence. This theme came about because we did a screening of Ex Machina, a couple weeks ago. And if you read Chloe James' review, giving it a 9 out of 10, which I wholeheartedly agree with her on this, it was a fantastic movie. Very the type of movie that will make you discuss things from a theoretical standpoint. I mean, that's what artificial intelligence is. And it doesn't have some weird gimmicky, it's trying to turn on you and kill you like Terminators against human beings. But, you know, I think that the important thing about this film is, you know, what questions do you even ask and stuff with a true AI? You know, how does it develop into trying to be more human and all that? And the best story, the best elements of storytelling that we get in the nerd universe is always somebody like Spock or Data from Star Trek, who always has the perfect commentary on humanity. But, you know, artificial intelligence is straight trying to learn all the nuances of being a human being. And that's kind of what, you know, this film was about, but also trying to do kind of a beta test to determine if it is true artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. So the reason we've coined the title of this show is, are we ready for true artificial intelligence? I think from a storytelling standpoint, we talk about artificial intelligence as the true Frankenstein's monster, that it will eventually turn on you and try to kill humanity. We've seen it, Terminator. For those of you that watch Person of Interest, you've got two warring artificial intelligence units trying to reshape, you know, the world. If you go see Avengers 2, you know, that's basically what Ultron is, and whose idea of reshaping the world and making it better is to destroy humanity and kind of start over. So I'm going to pose this question and everything, besides the title. Even though, like I said, it says, are we ready for it? But I'll go one step further. Should we have artificial intelligence? Chloe, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, that is actually a really good question. I mean, do we need it? How smart do we really need a computer, like, you know, per se? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a robot, you know, per se. And you know what? My answer is, because I guess despite being a nerd, I'm kind of a troglodyte, so... No, I don't know. Like,
it's that's the point of the question. It's not a straight yes or no question. There's a lot of benefits.
It's no, but that's my answer. No, but I think we should push it as hard as we can up until the point where it could start really thinking on its own and making decisions on its own against us. Like, yeah, I actually do have a big secret fear of robot takeovers due to my overactive imagination and watching quite a lot of movies and reading a lot of books. So, yeah. But actually, you know what? I'm even more scared of, like, you know, itty bitty tiny, you know, nanobots, probably with AI. Yeah, so, yeah, if you ask me if, like, we should have nanobots with AI, God, no. Heck no. With the capability of building more nanobots.
You know, I go back to Isaac Asimov, you know, in the robot stories and building, and especially with the three laws that, you know, there's no way they can harm a human being and everything. It's... To me, it's a lot of wishful thinking. It's what we want. We trying to, you know, we want to attain that perfection and to get something that's better than humanity, because humanity sucks. And for any listeners in Baltimore, any fans we might have in Baltimore, you know this better than anybody this week.
That's true. Proof that. Yeah. But you know,
I
would always hope that, like, humanity could achieve, like, greatness on its own rather than having to create something else that's not human.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm optimistic.
I read way too much Asimov as a kid, so I'm going to say no. But also, have faith in the human race that we will actually get to that point.
Yeah, on our own.
I have a feeling we will do something stupid to send ourselves back into the Stone Ages, a la the show, the Doom Show Revolution.
Right.
Where it's disease, war, famine, all of the... yeah, I'd be shocked if we actually get to that point, because we're so stupid. We may be making the same mistakes for 30,000 years as a species, and we keep right on making them. So I'm amazed
well,
we've made
you know,
it this far to perfect.
We have this idea that, you know, we can make machines that are so, you know, supercomputers are so smart that, you know, you get information at a moment's notice that can calculate, you know, the right decision and then blah, 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 blah. But, of course, we see all these stories about, well, you know, it also thinks logically. You know, can you really teach a machine, you know, even an artificial intelligence, the true aspect of what it means to be human, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there is anything, I don't think you can. I think that's what makes human beings great from an evolutionary scale. We are unique in that. I mean, I'm not a sciencey person, and I barely passed it in college. I did keep all my books just for reference. But one of the best books I ever read in college was a book titled The Third Chimpanzee, and it did talk about all the similarities and, you know, that there's only really a difference in DNA, you know, a 2% difference between us. But in that 2%, we develop concepts of religion and, you know, love. And, you know, that's what identifies us as being human, you know, and being better, so to speak, on the evolutionary scale. So how do you, if that's all natural and just comes into being, how can you engineer that into an AI for it to truly understand? You know, of course, I will also, you know, go back to an Oscar Wilde quote that, you know, experience is the one thing that you can't get for nothing. And it is our experiences that do truly make us, you know, unique and intelligent and develops us as human beings, so to speak. Well, I was just going to say, it seems like every story that we have about artificial intelligence is just the Frankenstein allegory where shit gets bad.
Well, I mean, then you could look at it from a data from Star Trek point of view where he does go seek and earn the experiences of humans, the humans around him, and therefore becomes more and more human throughout the series. Yeah.
Well, even they did the Frankenstein allegory too, because remember, Data wasn't the first android that Minion Sung created. There was Lore, and Lore did go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and try to kill everybody. So,
and
they
of course,
that to some extent.
Well, you know, the Star Trek Generations, you know, when he's debating about putting the emotion chip and all the and everything that comes with it. So, again, I would go that artificial intelligence is wishful thinking. You know, we want to find something that's better, but is it really about building a machine that should be better than human beings, or is it that we should strive as human beings to be better than what we really are? Because, you know, maybe we are just simple base animals that, you know, we're not going to get much better than that. You know, we're still going to be dealing with apathy, you know, violence, dealing with right and wrong and trying to get past, you know, Darwinian themes where, you know, we only look out for ourselves, yada, 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 and all that. And you also see the worst of humanity and then trying to bring that back when you deal with post-apocalyptic type shows. That was a great thing about, like, you know, Jericho is that was the one true show that said, despite tough times, this is what makes our city great. It's our community. Even though we don't always agree, even though we have an election in the middle of all this and people take sides, we're still a community and we fight for one another. Especially when the other when the town 8 miles down the road is trying to kill us. So, anyway, I just thought it would be an interesting question to pose, since we are talking about Ex Machina and everything. In getting into that movie, this is probably a little bit more for me and Chloe since she saw the screening with me. I one of the things that I really liked about that movie is the machine trying to understand what it means to date and, you know, the concept of love and being attached to that. and also getting past, you know, the creator, not to give anything away, basically just using you as a sex bot, so to speak.
Yeah. So I read it in our... I actually read a real life it might be in our future to have sex bots.
Yes. Yes.
Would you guys have sex with a robot? I'm just wondering.
I have just a innate fear of putting an extremity into something that generates electricity.
All right.
Just throwing that out there.
That's a good fear to have, probably.
I agree with that fear, and I'll take it a step further and say I've had some ex-girlfriends that could have been a robot. I'm just throwing it out there. We're not going to mention names. Yeah. But for any of them that might still stalk me and pay attention, you know who you are. All I have to say.
You know, I think I would have sex with a robot if he looked like Jude Law from AI.
wait a minute. But you'd much rather have sex with a guy that looks like Jude Law who's cosplaying the machine, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and here's the other thing about, because Brendan and I are, you know, huge Person of Interest fans, mm-hmm. and that show is just absolutely, you know, kind of incredible with how they refer to the AIs as God, and especially how they're winding down this season. But that's interesting to the standpoint of, here you have two different AIs warring with one another. Okay, for supremacy, like, there can only be one. It's like a Highlander match or whatever. Can there, if you have artificial intelligence, isn't that always going to be a concept with them as, well, there's always going to be one better than something, better than another AI. I must go to war with it, and I must suppress that somehow. Because just because slavery's dead and all that, we still... in a human society, live with it that, well, one class is better than another class, and or these group of people are better than those other group of people, and whatnot. To me, that just seems inevitable with two versions of artificial intelligence. That's where I think Person of Interest actually gets it right, is you can't have that perfection where we're all going to live in peace and a perfect utopia. I don't think utopia ever exists. That's the whole point of Lost Horizon. James Hilton is. There is no such thing.
Well,
and
I suppose it depends on the programming of the AI and how their core programming started. With the Person of Interest, you know, AI, they were both programmed to seek out. I mean, they were specifically programmed to seek out threats. Well.
Right.
Another AI seeking out a threat would be a threat to the first AI. So, you know, it really depends on the core programming, I think, of the AI of how it starts. You know, what it's, because yes, it's an AI; it can think for itself, but its core programming would be its DNA, so to speak.
Right.
You know, what it was originally programmed to do. So, I really think it comes down to that when it comes down to whether or not they coexist. And obviously, in Person of Interest's case, they wouldn't and couldn't and shouldn't and don't.
Right.
But in other cases, you know, you're talking about, you know, like, for example, in the iRobot scenario, you're talking about a bunch of bots that were made to serve humans. Well,
right.
They're not threats to each other. They're just threats. So
right.
I think it really depends on that part of the story.
Well, and that's a good example of, you know, taking out the human element, because I, you know, in the movie,
right.
I love the part where they explain that the reason he was rescued is he had a higher survival rate than a child, but a human being would be able to make that distinction based on emotion or hunches or whatever, and you can't teach a machine that. For better or for worse, the late Robin Williams, I always think Bicentennial Man is one of the best movies he ever did. I'm not saying that the movie was necessarily great compared to, you know, the actual story, but for a movie and with him, with his dramatic and comedic, you know, range and everything, and the cast itself, just that exploration you know, and finally after, you know, 200 years be like, what does it take for me to be classified as a human being? What threshold do I actually have to achieve? Because even he evolves, even with new equipment, and evolves over time into something, you know, on an evolutionary scale, even though it may be different than what it is for human beings.
Yeah, and it was all about the experience again, too.
And he did. He experienced love and heartbreak and all the things that humanity, you know, goes through. And it's not that I'm not sympathetic to Data. I will always love Data from Next Generation. But I think that, you know, Bicentennial, you know, that character experienced a lot more of those human things than Data ever did. He was just still the commentary on humanity itself. So, it's a debate that will keep on going, and I think it'll be very interesting to keep talking about artificial intelligence, because I think that eventually we will have that. But I also think that, you know, the allegory of Frankenstein, it's when we push the boundaries of technology, especially with like artificial intelligence, then that's a good story to continue to pay attention to, because it does ask the question, and which, you know, I will take a line from Jurassic Park. You never bother to ask the question of whether you should do it.
Yeah.
It's
only,
not whether you
should. You only cared about whether you should. Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, okay. I've got about 3 minutes left. So, yes, we're going to get into kind of breaking news on what we wanted to talk about earlier in our segment of what you should be streaming. We used to do this for just what to be watching on Netflix, but we have broadened our category on what you should be streaming. And the main reason is that is the way TV is going. And I think Aquarius,
yep.
but
the
with
future.
David Duchovny is, perfect example. It is still airing on NBC at its regular time slot, but they have put all 13 episodes on NBC.com and on demand, so you can watch and binge watch it instead of waiting every week like you used to. So I applaud NBC for going that route and saying, we know people will watch it at regular time, but with, you know, as busy as lives are and with DVRs and whatnot, why don't we just let people stream and binge watch this stuff more and more? So
yeah, and that'll be on after the first episode, which I believe is May 28th, I think, is the first episode. So
yeah.
Immediately first episode, all 13 go to streaming. And
yep.
It looks really good. It's about the guy chasing down Charlie Manson. So
right.
And
you've got the guy who played Renly Baratheon in the first season of Game of Thrones.
Sweet.
Yeah. And
I
with David Duchovny going much more to an investigator role. So when that hits, I think everybody should be streaming it, and we will definitely do a review. That's kind of where our formats are going now, is we're not going to do episode reviews anymore. We're going to talk about our TV reviews are going to be very simple. We will talk about the season premiere, especially when it's dealing with a cliffhanger. We will do a full season review, especially with those that, you know, you can binge watch 10, 13 episodes. And then we'll talk about, if it's regular network TV, the Oh My God moments, which happen on our shows. Our blogger, Allison Costa, texted me today and said, can I write about the Oh My God moment on Flash? Because it was a pretty biggie yesterday. I'm like, yes. We won't make our audience wait for the full season review. So, all right, we got about a minute here, so we're going to close this show out. As I mentioned earlier, if you're in the Dallas area, come watch Avengers 2 with us tomorrow at Cinemark Legacy in Plano. And we will be back next week. We do not have the final details yet, but pay attention to our website and Facebook. But we will be doing a special May the 4th episode on Monday for Star Wars, and we're going to be telling you all of our theories of Episode 7 and what we think is going to happen. And you should stay tuned for that. So, and Brendan's got a lot of them.
True enough.
Yeah. All right, everybody, we are out of here. Say goodbye, and we're going to close this show out.
Bye-bye.
Adios, muchachos.